My next guest on Booked is Mira Sukharov. She is the author of Public Influence, a guide to op-ed writing and social media engagement, out now on University of Toronto Press. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about your background and why you chose to embark on this project.
I'm a regular tenured professor of political science in Canada, and I found several years ago that I really enjoyed connecting my ideas to audiences that weren't only my peers, weren't only other scholars reading academic journals behind paywalls or gates or academic presses, but I really wanted to find a way to connect with a broad audience on ideas that I think are really urgent and important and topical.
And why are you passionate about helping people with something to say, as you put it, strike an effective voice online? Why does this resonate for you?
Well, online social media, that is our new public square, and it's capturing people's activity, imagination, and attention in ways that ordinary public squares never did. And so we have to really look at it and say, what's going on this medium? Are we debating effectively? Are we debating with evidence and with compassion? Are we able to persuade our listeners? Are we speaking in echo chambers? Do we only get to hear people we already agree with? Are we finding that the ways that we're communicating are creating more polarization in society? So how can we do social media better? So that's the biggest question that I ask in the book. And then the sub-question is, how can experts help make social media a more informed place? And so what I do in the book is I toggle back and forth between social media as a broad, uncurated space versus the op-ed pages where people write with the help of editors and pitch to editors particular standalone pieces. 750 words, let's say, would be the standard op-ed length, an opinion piece. And then from there, the conversation continues on social media. And the reverse, we see from social media what society is interested in, what's really getting our juices going, and how can we learn from that? How can we use social media as sort of a laboratory to then write informed and provocative op-ed pieces?
You also talk about how to read an op-ed, and it seems like one of the first steps that you encourage your readers to take is to really read a wide cross-section of opinions, whether from, you know, particularly conservative or liberal outlets or on different topics. Why is it important to read others' writing, and how should they read it?
We absolutely have to make sure that we're getting inputs from a wide variety of sources and a wide variety of opinions, and in turn, understanding how different sub-communities think, different political people of different political persuasions, people from different vantage points, how they think can help us make more effective and persuasive arguments so that we're not just speaking to people who already agree with us.
Because that's a key part of your book, and in chapter 4, writing an effective op-ed and really trying to figure out how to effectively reach people. It's not just running your mouth or just standing up on the soapbox.
Absolutely. One of the things that people need to remember when they want to reach an audience that doesn't already necessarily agree with them is it's so important to anticipate your critics. What do people who disagree with you, what are they going to say? Or what have they already said? And so to really really work it right into the body of your piece, counter-arguments. And the strongest counter-argument you can come up with, not the strawman type of counter-argument that you can easily shoot down, but what is a really good, thoughtful rebuttal to your point? And if you can raise that rebuttal in a fair and clear way, and then rebut it, in turn, your argument, your initial argument, will be that much more persuasive to the reader.
Talking to Mira Sukharov, author of Public Influence, a guide to op-ed writing and social media engagement, out now on University of Toronto Press. Chapter 7 of your book is Avoiding the Echo Chamber and Communicating Your Ideas to an Evidence-Resistant Audience. So many opinion pieces in the local papers are themselves wildly inaccurate and resistant to evidence. How do people avoid this lowest common denominator problem?
It's really important to support your opinions with evidence. And evidence can come in many ways. It can come from studies that others have done that you are able to research and cite. It might come from studies you have done. It might come from lived experience, your own personal experience, and you can share that. But just, of course, with the caveat that your experience may not be universal, may not be the majority experience, but it counts for something. When I wrote that chapter, I was really thinking about how little we support our ideas with evidence and how important it is to do that. And, you know, you might, on social media, let's say you're in a heated debate with someone and goes back and forth down the thread, you may want to give up because you might say to yourself, well, I'm never going to convince this person. But remember that it isn't only your interlocutor you're trying to convince. It isn't only the person you're actually arguing with. It's all the many other people who are watching the debate and learning from you.
So talk about how you structured your book and how you chose to handle this, because it is ultimately a quick read. It's very handy for anyone thinking about how to shape your ideas into the format of an op-ed or even just a letter to the editor. So how did you determine the way to structure this? I mean, it's not something that is like a giant textbook. This is a very quick read and fun. I mean, you invite us into your process quickly.
That idea of inviting the reader in is really a key part of what I'm trying to get people to do when they write op-eds and when they engage on social media. So I'm glad that I succeeded in doing that in the book.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Thanks. I do try to use an accessible and engaging writing voice. So that's really the first thing you need to do. You need to make sure your reader stays with you because they have every incentive to click away from your op-ed piece the minute they get bored, the minute they think you're pontificating into the air, the minute they think you're not connecting with them and that you're not respecting them as a reader. And, of course, same thing goes for social media. So you want to connect with your reader. You want to bring evidence. You want to write clearly. You want to write engagingly. Avoid jargon. Avoid technical terms. Use language that will create a relationship and a dynamic and a rapport.
What do op-ed writers and engagers on social media need to know about political labels?
Mm-hmm. That's a chapter I really enjoyed writing because one thing I found as a sort of a scholar, expert, someone whose work it is to think about words and terms and categories is so often these really important labels that we use in everyday political and social discourse to categorize ourselves and others are not necessarily understood the same way by everyone using the term. Terms like feminist, terms like Zionism, Islamophobia, even race, racism. Right now there's a big debate in the U.S. Political arena about what white supremacy means. Does white supremacy only mean people who are neo-Nazis and support the KKK, or does white supremacy mean the structural ideas of racism that are all around us, whether or not we're aware of them or whether or not we subscribe to them? Those are two very different understandings of the same term, and the kinds of understandings we have will help shape the kinds of policies we want to see happening, the kinds of teaching, educational materials we want to see in our schools, the kinds of elected officials we want to put in our nation's, in the houses of government, in the houses of parliament, in Congress. So that's a chapter, really, that really tries to unpack a lot of these isms, these labels. And then the other thing that people really have to worry about on social media is really new and changing and dynamic rules of discourse and conversation. So it's very easy to accidentally step in a pothole that will get you labeled as having said something racist or offensive, even, again, if you didn't mean to. So you have to be very aware of that. You have to learn from others. It can be very painful to be kind of attacked. You might feel that you're being attacked, but you have to really do your best to learn. You want to think about dynamics like outrage culture, tone policing, virtue signaling, all these dynamics mm-hmm. and these words that get thrown around. So the book helps unpack those ideas and make social media users and writers a little more aware.
Well, and that's also part of your chapter dealing with social media blowback. I mean, Twitter, for example, mm-hmm. tends to facilitate heinous sexism and attacks on women who dare to raise their voices on political issues. Have you dealt with that personally?
Mm-hmm. Generally, I have dealt with some horrible misogyny and anti-Semitism aimed my way. Usually it actually comes the old-fashioned way from hate mail. If I write a piece on Twitter, I've dealt with a lot of anger due to some of my positions or ideas at times. And certainly women and people of color and other minoritized or racialized groups do have to worry more that they may be subject to more attack. On the other hand, we need to make sure a diversity of voices gets out there. So everyone has to kind of make sure we're allying and being what are called accomplices and standing up for marginalized voices to make sure that the op-ed pages are diverse pages and that our social media spaces are as diverse as they can be.
Mira Sukharov, author of Public Influence, A Guide to Op-Ed Writing and Social Media Engagement, new book out on University of Toronto Press. I do want to congratulate you because I feel like part of the success of the book is that you're inviting people of many different beliefs, even someone you might personally disagree with, to do a more effective job of communicating their message. And I think that's something that, while I'm not personally someone who is all about political compromise in my own views, it really, I think, is an impressive work because as I was reading the book, I didn't feel like I needed to be on one team or another to learn from what you have to offer.
There's a bit of an ulterior motive, of course. If you end up persuading people with whom you disagree to write a strong piece in the op-ed pages or a popular tweet, it gives you the opportunity to rebut it and write a rejoinder piece, write a response piece. And that's the way to get conversation going, and that's the way to really further your ideas as well. But thank you for the compliment.
Talk about this challenge for scholars and experts to switch from research mode to, say, general interest mode.
So one thing I find when I'm trying to help scholars and other experts shift modes from a research mode and a writing mode that is more about traditional academic publishing to shift from that mode into op-ed writing and social media engagement, it's that traditional research often focuses on why questions. Why do wars break out? Why does peace happen? Why or how lobby groups succeed in pushing their message? Why do certain candidates win elections? And in the op-ed pages, what editors tend to be looking for is more prescriptive questions. And by that, I mean this. Who should do what and why? Who is your audience? Who are you trying to persuade? And what is your ask? And academics sometimes like to say, oh, well, I'm just trying to get readers to think about the issue a bit differently. But that's not enough. You want to move your audience to action. You want to move your target to action. Now, your target may be the president, maybe the prime minister, it may be a political party, or it may be society writ large. You may write a piece about going vegan, and so that wouldn't necessarily be directed at an elected official, but it might be if it involves some sort of food policy. Here, up here in Canada, we just went through a really controversial process of issuing a new food guide, and it's amazing how much blowback that kind of thing has from certain food lobbies, government, regular citizens. So again, who are you asking to act differently or act the same, and why? What is your ask?
We're going to have to leave it there for time. I just am so pleased that we got a chance to speak, and I so appreciate the work you've done on this book. Again, University of Toronto Press has put out Public Influence, A Guide to Op-Ed Writing and Social Media Engagement from Mira Sukharov. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us.
Thank you for having me.